Hello there, and welcome to another episode of A Nice Cup of Hister Tea. We hope you're all doing well and keeping safe where possible with everything that's going on with coronavirus. If you're listening later and the lockdown has been lifted according to the plan, then we really hope you're not taking the ability to be with other people and go into the pub and everything for granted.
Yep, if Carrie says one more time how she'd love to go to a pub garden in the sun and just chill, I might do something drastic.
Charming.
But whatever the state of things when you're listening to this, we hope that you're enjoying the show, and we're going to keep bringing you the quality content that you love, we hope, for as long as we possibly can. In this week's episode, we're talking about a woman that some of you may have heard of, but we're betting a few of you haven't.
On 23rd of April, it was the 25th anniversary of the passing of author Pamela Lyndon Travers, a writer who's probably best known for the creation of arguably the world's favourite magical nanny, Mary Poppins.
So, stick the kettle on, grab a chair, and let's get historical.
So, let's start with her early life. She was born Helen Lyndon Groff on the 9th of August, 1899, and Maryborough? I can't read. Maryborough, Queensland, Australia.
Her mother was called Margaret Agnes Moorhead, who was the sister of the Premier of Queensland, who's kind of like the Prime Minister kind of person.
Yeah, of the Queensland Mayor. Area. Yeah. Her father, Travers Groff, died when she was 7 years old, possibly as a result of being a heavy drinker after an unsuccessful career as a bank manager. Yeah. Kind of went from bad to worse.
Yeah, she was known as Lyndon throughout most of her childhood.
Yeah. After her father died, she moved with her mother and sisters to New South Wales and lived there with the help of her great aunt for 10 years. And she boarded for some time during World War One at the Normanhurst Girls' School. She did often become quite bored with her classes there, though, and she would rather read on her own instead.
Yeah, she was a very avid reader, and she had a very active imagination. She loved fairy tales and history, which, you know, not that dissimilar from us. Not that I'm comparing us to her at all, but, you know, We like fairy tales and history.
I mean, we are practically perfect in every way.
Nice!
Yeah.
Anyway, she also loved animals, and she would build little nature parks in corners of her garden, and even imagined herself as a hen.
It's probably gone a bit too far there, but, it's a bit clucking mad, if you ask me.
Oh, wow, that's two in one.
I know, right?
This is going fab.
She did have some poems published in her teens in Australian periodicals, and she actually had one published by the father of Rupert Murdoch. Yeah. And some of her poems were quite erotic, and many had Irish themes due to her paternal heritage. There's a lot of Irish immigration due to convicts in Australia. She then turned her talents to the stage and adopted the name Pamela Lyndon Travers and began to get a reputation as a dancer and Shakespearean actress. And she actually toured with a repertory company in 1921.
That's cool. You don't always hear of dancers and Shakespearean actors being one and the same.
Well, no, but I suppose there's some room for dance moves in Shakespeare.
Yeah, I mean, do you remember the bit where in The Tempest when Ariel comes out, kind of dressed as a peacock?
I mean, I was thinking more of the bit in Bill the film where they're like, what's that bit? Dance moves.
Wow, we were very different.
Yep.
Anyway,
you're slightly more intellectual there.
Which is not usually the way it goes.
No.
What is wrong today?
It's a topsy-turvy day.
Yep. But it's fine. Back to P.L. Travers.
Yep.
This wasn't well paid. Being the actress and the dancer. So she wrote a column over the course of 2 years for a Sydney newspaper. This wasn't popular with her wealthier relatives, as this was considered a common and vulgar profession by some at the time.
Yeah, ladies don't write for newspapers.
So she then decided to leave for England in 1924, as she felt that the Australians lacked humour.
Okay, can't say I've ever come across that myself, but alright.
Nope, she now wanted to pursue a literary career. I find that kind of funny that she came to England, because I know, and it's commonly said in different shows and stuff, that the British humour is quite different, it's quite specific.
Yeah.
We're very sarcastic, with a very dry sense of humour.
We've got a very self-deprecating humour. I mean, Australian humour is not that different, it is still quite dry.
Yeah.
But there, I would say out of the two, Australians are more outrightly funny. Like, you know when an Australian's joking with you. With an English person, you have to take a minute.
Yeah, you can't, you know, like in The Big Bang Theory, where Sheldon doesn't understand if what Penny is saying is sarcasm.
Yeah.
That's a lot of English stuff. We're sarcastic more than we're not.
Yeah, you go on holiday with sarcasm cards and you just hold them.
Yeah, you can probably tell in our podcast we're quite sarcastic, but we normally make it obvious. There we go. We make it obvious. So that's her life. So we're going to go, now she's in England.
Yeah.
And this is where her writing starts, because she decides to put pen to paper that way. Rather than journalism, she went into writing.
And she's already got this talent for poetry. She's got talent for prose. So, you know, write what you know.
Yep.
So she decided to write about her journey from Australia to England. She continued to publish poems and some small articles and newspapers over here, including the Irish Statesman, where she came into contact with a friend and supporter, George William Russell, and their relationship would end up being a lifelong one.
Through Russell, she met and befriended poet William Butler Yeats and mystic G.I. Gurdjieff.
Yeah, and then with them, she actually studied and started to pursue a passion for Irish mythology, which there is a lot to study. Yeah, there is a lot to study. She then wrote her first book, The Moscow Excursion, and that was published in 1934, and it drew on her experience of travel writing from her journey from Australia to England. And it told about the story of her travels in Stalin's Russia during autumn 1932, and by which time she was in about her early 30s.
Yeah, this book was not well received, however, by the critics, and referred to her as a cheap caricature of similar books that was written at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was also considered fantastical and exaggerated, as she states at the start of the book that she changed the names of some of the people she spoke to and replaced them with fictitious initials.
I mean, that's not fictitious. That's not imaginative. That's
no, it's common
protecting
practice.
Their identity.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm going to say this, but I'm not entirely sure. I wonder how differently it would have been received if she'd written under a male pseudonym.
At that time, probably a lot different. Because even it's happening up until like the 1990s. Like J.K. Rowling, when she wrote Harry Potter, she was told to put J.K. Rowling, not Joanne, because they didn't think women who wrote books would be as well received. So that's in 1998.
Yeah.
Like, this was back in the 1930s, so it would have been so different.
The book itself, though, was translated by Olga Mokots, who added a commentary to it, and apparently she seemed to have solved the mystery of who the initials belonged to.
Oh.
So she tracked them down.
That's fun.
At the time, Russia was under Soviet control, and the regime, shockingly, was strict and often deadly to outsiders.
Yes.
You were told where you should visit and what you were allowed to see and write about. So it was very, very, very strict.
Yeah, but the translation shows that Travers visited homes of actual Russian people, which was very dangerous.
Yeah, so she went above and beyond for this.
Yes, and she also spoke to non-Soviet sanctioned artists and poets, actors, film and theatre producers.
Yeah. So they were acting dangerously as well, speaking out about it.
And she didn't care, she just went straight in there.
Yeah.
The book, therefore, shows life as it actually was under Soviet rule and describes real people with real context at all of this great personal risk to herself and others.
So I'm wondering if that kind of added to the fictitious atmosphere of it, that she's writing for real what was happening, but people weren't familiar with that. People were used to the Soviet spin, so to speak. So they thought that what she was doing was fictitious, but she was actually writing for real.
Yeah. So now we're going something slightly different, but actually it was written and published in the same year as the Moscow Excursion in 1934.
Yeah.
And that was Mary Poppins, which was an instant success.
Yeah. There's a total of 8 books in the series.
I did not know that. I thought there was just Mary Poppins.
Yeah, so did I, to be honest. There was Mary Poppins in 1934. Mary Poppins Comes Back in 1935. Mary Poppins Opens the Door in 1943. Mary Poppins in the Park in 1952. Mary Poppins From A to Z in 1962. Mary Poppins in the Kitchen in 1975, Mary Poppins in Cherry Tree Lane in 1982, and Mary Poppins and the House Next Door in 1988. So basically between 1934 and 1988, Mary Poppins has just kind of moved around the house and then outside a bit.
The books had illustrations by Mary Shepherd, who is the daughter of the original illustrator of Winnie the Pooh. And even though they had a difficult relationship and they didn't always get on.
But she did the original illustrations, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. I didn't realise, and when I first read that, I was like, oh, maybe, you know, when the movie was, obviously, we know it was made into a big movie by Walt Disney, that didn't incorporate all of these little books, but it was made way before she even wrote like four of the five of the other books.
Yeah.
So I'd be intrigued to read them to see how it expands and if they included it in the second Mary Poppins movie. Yeah.
To be honest with you, I've never read any of the Mary Poppins books, so I would be intrigued to read them, just, you know, for a bit of history.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, 1930s, the world was going to change it again.
Yeah.
World War II broke out, and Travers was involved in that. She actually ended up working for the UK Ministry of Information for part of the war.
That means she's technically a spy.
Kinda. Spy, or like working as part of the spy organisation. Cool. Which is pretty cool. And then towards the end of the war, she moved to Arizona and lived there on a Navajo reservation, and was actually going by a native name at the time that she kept secret. Yeah. So she has this thing about her where she not only goes to a place, she becomes immersed in the culture. And not just the culture that you see on the surface, the actual culture. So not just Russian culture, like real Russian culture. Not just American culture, Navajo culture. You know, the
stuff
culture.
That isn't really written about, that should be.
Yeah, and she did continue to write, including young adult novels,
mm-hmm.
A play, essays on mythology and symbology, which she also lectured on. That's so cool. That interest in Irish mythology carried on.
Yeah, she was a writer in residence at Radcliffe College and Smith College, though apparently she wasn't that popular.
Hmm, which is a shame.
Mm.
So, now we get to the bit that you absolutely love.
Oh, yeah.
Disney.
Yes, I am a Disney... I don't even know if nerd is big enough.
I mean, I don't use this distinction often, but you are a Disney geek.
Oh.
Like, I'm a Disney geek in that I know a lot about Disney, but you are a Disney nerd.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So there's that knowledge, and then there's that bit, a little bit.
A little bit extra, a little bit more.
That kind of verges on.
Why do you know that? You know when you say things to people and they're like, that's a cool bit of, it's a cool little tidbit, but why do you know that?
To which my answer is usually, why do you not? The information's out there.
You're fun. So, Disney.
Disney.
Walt Disney himself loved the books about Mary Poppins, and he tried to get Travers to agree to turn it into a film, first offering her this in 1945, but for many years she completely refused it.
Fair enough.
Completely. When she decided possibly doing it, she gave a couple of demands. Including that the film be live action and not at all animated, as Disney was becoming known for.
Yeah, but like the Snow White and Pinocchio and Peter Pan.
That is a big thing, because obviously if you've seen Mary Poppins, you know that it's not 100% live action.
Yeah.
She agreed to sell the rights in 1959, so Disney had been trying for, 14 years to get the rights to this film, and she was just like kept saying no, but she decided to sell it, but she made sure that she was taken on as a consultant on the script,
which is fair. It's her baby, her creation.
In 1964, so now you're almost 20 years almost, mm-hmm. after first asking, Disney Studios made the movie Mary Poppins. It was starring Julie Andrews in the title role, and then Dick Van Dyke as a lovable chimney sweep Bert with that awful Cockney accent. We don't sound like that.
We don't. But that Cockney accent is so bad it's good. It's like become one of the most endearing parts of the film because it's so bad.
It's not great, but you can tell it's an English accent.
Yeah, you can tell he's like supposed to be a lovable Cockney.
Yeah. The film took several years to complete due to disagreements between Travers and the script writers, who she said the film was too, what's the word?
Too saccharine, too sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, too sickly, too nice.
Considering they made a song called A Spoonful of Sugar.
Yeah.
Kind of get that. The film, however, did make Travers, obviously, very wealthy, but she was not a fan and reportedly cried at the premiere. It grossed more than $75 million.
Which, considering in 1964...
Yeah, I wonder what that translates into now.
We can probably find out.
Possibly. I'll have a look in a moment.
Yeah.
A film was released in 2013, which is when I watched this, and this is why I said to Carrie about doing a P.L. Travers podcast. It was released, it was in 2013, starring Tom Hanks as Walt Disney and Emma Thompson incredible Emma Thompson as P.L. Travers. Mm-hmm. And it's called Saving Mr. Banks. And it tells the story of how the book was made into the film and the relationship between Disney and Travers during the process. Mm-hmm. Now, it shows her as very stoic, very stiff. She doesn't smile or laugh very much. They give her a script, and I think at the beginning, she records everything. She brings, like, one of her other demands is that everything has to be recorded. So she has this massive tape player, and they give her a script, and she's like, nope, 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 and, like, rips this entire script apart. And then they'll play her songs, and you're watching it, and they're playing, like, they do Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, and she's like, that's a stupid word. Like, what is this? And it's like, it's just like that. And it kind of shows I know Walt Disney, we're going to have to do a podcast on him at some point. But I don't think he was that nice to her. I think he'd gotten to the point where he'd tried for so long, he'd been nicey-nicey. And then when he kind of got the rights and the film had been recorded, like, everything had been recorded, he then kind of just gave up because she didn't even get an invitation to the premiere.
Really?
She found out the premiere was happening and called Walt Disney's PA and was like, I think my invitation was lost in the mail. When is it? And just turned up. And Walt Disney was like, what, she's here? Like, she's come to here. And, yeah.
I mean, I see it from her point of view in that it's her baby. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to protect it and wanted it to be her vision.
Yeah.
However, when you do sell the rights, you have to be aware that there's going to be a certain amount of creative license taken.
Yeah.
But from his point of view as well, he tried so hard for ages to get this book. He really wanted it. He really wanted to bring it to the masses in the way he knew how. And then when he had it, at that point, the money had been paid out. The time was ticking on. They were on a time limit at that point. They were on a budget. And she was just making it harder and harder and harder. So I do sort of see where he's coming from as well with it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But she did want no animation, and there is quite a big animation section, obviously, when they go to
when they jump in the
picture. Yeah. But I don't know. I thought I loved the film. It's one of those ones that you watch usually, like, every Christmas it's on.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel warm and fuzzy.
I mean, it's a good film, and it is a good family film.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those ones where you watch the film and you enjoy it as Disney's Mary Poppins.
Mm-hmm.
And then you read the books as Travers' Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
And you get the distinction between the two.
And if you have Disney Plus, there is a little sub-series on it called Prop Culture.
Mm-hmm.
And each episode is people in America, massively, they collect props from different movies. And they've got this guy who has, like, the biggest prop collection. But he's been given this show, and he goes around different movies, and you look at props and things from the movies. And there's a Mary Poppins episode. And they even have the girl who plays Jane Banks come back and see her James Banks, like, coat. They get her little orange coat out, and she's holding it up. And obviously it was, like, what? 65, we're talking, 50, because it's the year my mum was born, so it's, like, 55 years ago, and she's holding it up, and, like, how much different it is. It's really cool, so you should watch that.
That'll be pretty cool.
Yeah. And another little, this is where I'm going to just show my Disney nerd now. Did you know that Mary Poppins had to be delayed in filming because they really wanted Julie Andrews, and she fell pregnant, so they waited for her to give birth and obviously have some maternity leave, and then they filmed Mary Poppins because they really wanted her.
That's cool, to actually have something like that delayed because they want you that badly.
But there you go, that's a little thing of, why do you know that?
I mean, why did I not? The information's out there.
Now you know it.
Now I do.
So, yeah. So now we're going to go on to...
Onto her personal life. So, who was P.L. Travers as a person?
There's not that much on her, to be fair.
No, it was kind of hard with the research to find out a lot about her because she was quite a private person.
Yeah, and obviously we... don't massively think of Mary Poppins as being hers. We think of Disney.
Yeah, easily. From what we can gather, she probably wasn't that easy a person to get on with. She did keep to herself more often than not. She never married, but lived with Madge Bernand, and there's a speculation that they were romantically involved.
Yeah, there's a lot of things when obviously it wasn't okay to be gay.
Yeah, I mean...
There was a lot of best friends that lived together and didn't marry. Like, on both males and
best
females.
Best friends, confirmed bachelors, things like that, you know, companions. And, I mean, it was slightly more acceptable for it to be with women than it was men.
Yeah.
It was downright illegal for men, but it still wasn't okay.
No.
So she just never married. She never had children of her own, but she actually adopted an Irish boy called Camillus. He was a twin. He never actually learned of his true origins until he ran into his twin in a pub.
So, like, real life Parent Trap sort of thing.
Yeah, like Parent Trap meets Blood Brother sort of thing.
Imagine that, like, literally walking in and seeing someone who looks exactly like you, but you're not staring in a mirror.
I mean, I would be tempted just to touch their face and be like, nope, definitely not glass. And then I'd just stand there and just wait for a minute and be like, okay, I'm not dead, so you're not a doppelganger. Who be this?
Some of Travis's private life was revealed in a book in 1999 written by Valerie Lawson entitled Mary Poppins, She Wrote, The Life of P.L. Travers. Through writing, though it was written after her death, so Travers didn't actually get to confirm or deny anything that was written in it.
So they revealed it, but we're still not 100% certain whether it was true?
No.
Yeah. That's fair. In 1977, though, so for recognition of what she's done, she was awarded an OBE, which, for people outside of the UK, is an Officer of the Order of the British Empire for services to literature. So we've got different things that you can be awarded certain levels within the British Empire. So you can get a CBE, which is Citizen of the British Empire, OBE, Order of the British Empire, MBE is Member of the British Empire, and KBE is Knight of the British Empire. So at that point, you're like a knight or a dame.
Yeah.
So yeah, she got an OBE, which I think is that the second one up?
Yeah,
so
and she gets a medal for it, and she gets to call herself, she would have been P.L. Travers OBE.
Yeah.
Would be her official title now.
And she would have met the Queen and bowed before her and had the little the medal put on.
Yep. Sorry. And she did actually plan to write a final book to end the Mary Poppins saga. It was called Goodbye Mary Poppins. But she was persuaded not to by a public outcry to save the character and keep her alive in imaginations.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, as immortal as the character of Mary Poppins is, P.L. Travers not so much.
Yeah.
And sadly, on the 23rd of April 1996, Travers succumbed to the effects of an epileptic seizure at home in London, and she passed away.
That's really sad, because that would have been a sudden death.
Yeah, it would have been quick, but yeah, bless her.
25 years ago, last... when was the 23rd? Tuesday?
As we're recording this, it's the 25th, so 23rd
Friday.
Yeah.
25 years ago on Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah. But because of this, she's left behind quite a legacy.
Yes.
And aside from books and the film, and as well as all of her other works, she is remembered and immortalised in other ways.
Mm-hmm. A musical version of Mary Poppins debuted on the London stage in 2004, and apparently is much, much closer to the original book version of the character. So I think she would have liked that.
Yeah, definitely. And as I said before, Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious was written by the infamous Sherman Brothers and sung in the Disney film by Julie Andrews, Dick Van Dyke and an ensemble, and is one of the most popular Disney songs of all time, and the word itself is now officially part of the English language, featuring in the Oxford and Cambridge English dictionaries and formally forming part of the English language lexicon, completed with a pronunciation guide. Try to pronounce it backwards. I can't.
Docious Ali Expius Stick Fragicali Rupus.
Nicely done. I can confirm there was not a single practice of that. That was well done.
I'm so glad I did not fluff that.
You did.
I'm genuinely proud of myself.
That was so good. I mean, I struggled to say debuted. You just said supercalifragilisticexpialidocious backwards.
Docious Ali Expius Stick Fragicali Rupus.
Well done. No need to show off, because if you screw it up now, you're looking for more of a fall.
Yes, yes.
Quit while you are ahead, Carrie.
Yes, yes. But it's in the English language.
Yeah.
And there is actually, I did know the actual meaning for it, what it means, because each individual bit means something, and it's to do something with great something.
I cannot remember
what it is. Yeah, Em's on it. She's going to Google it now. So, Andrew Lloyd Webber actually sought permission to make the books into a musical whilst Travers was still alive. But she refused, unfortunately. However, a stage play was made of the Mary Poppins books in 1940. So there was a play made before the film was actually made. So there's a play made. There has been a musical made, which is close to the original books, but not by Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yeah, well, I've got it. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious is a nonsensical word that is used to describe something as being great or extraordinary.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, if something is great or extraordinary, and you just have not got a word good enough to describe it, it is supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
I mean, on the one hand, you can look at something and go, that is just
wow,
or that is supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
I can tell you what or who is supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Oh, thank you.
Chris Evans.
Oh.
Captain America is supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Mm. There are no words for him. Nope, there we are. Anywho!
Sidetrack.
Ah, yep.
So, as well as like Mary Poppins, her literary, her travelling, as we mentioned before, she was big into mythology.
Yeah.
And she's actually contributed to the study of mythology. She's written some official papers about it, including In Search of the Hero, The Continuing Relevance
of Myth and Fairy Tale. She wrote that in 1970.
It's going to happen at some point.
And What the Bee Knows, Reflections on Myth, Symbol and Story, in 1989, when she was at the age of 90. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I love how we are messing up words doing a podcast on words.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody needs to know about the relevance of myth, don't you?
I mean, who doesn't want to know about the relevance of myth? Honestly, I don't even know why I can't.
Sorry, Travers. Like, I mean, the most important word in this, we nailed it. All the other words...
And you did it backwards.
Yeah, all the other words are secondary. But wow. No, genuinely, her contribution to myth is not to be underestimated. She did a lot of studying, particularly in your Irish myths, your Celtic myths, and some work into the Navajo myths as well. So, yeah, it's fascinating. And as a student of myths and someone who loves mythology... Thank you so much for that, P.L. Travers, genuinely. Just before we get on to this week's Ridiculous Death, we know it's difficult to research about authors. We've had some trouble with this, especially if they like to be a little bit private. But imagine if you could talk to that author to find out what they liked about their book, what they didn't like, why they wrote that particular bit, and why they chose the cover art they did. Well, if you like that, we'll let Cindy tell you what you can listen to.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.
So, that's it for P.L. Travers. And to be honest with you, because we said she was private, there isn't a whole lot about her.
No.
But we found out what we could, and we hope you enjoyed it. So,
yeah, I think there's a lot more to her than just it was Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
But also, I think it is good to know, and I want people to know, that she did write Mary Poppins.
She did. And we are grateful to her for that.
Yeah,
for
definitely.
Having that literary figure. And now, one thing, we're going to go into our... Ridiculous Death now.
Yep.
And one thing that nannies will hopefully teach you is good manners.
Yes, Mary Poppins did instill that.
But sometimes good manners can go a bit too far.
Right.
For example, in the case of Tycho Brahe.
Okay.
Now, Tycho Brahe was a 16th century Danish nobleman and astronomer and writer. And he did a lot of astronomical observations. He's well known for being an astronomer, astrologer and alchemist. And he's credited as being the first competent mind in modern astronomy. Basically, he was very, very accurate for his time with a lot of his astronomical observations, and is quite possibly well known for having a false nose.
Okay.
He died in 1601, and a little bit later he was exhumed to see if it was from poisoning because of his nose.
Oh, so he died from maybe like lead poisoning if his nose is made from lead?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay.
Basically, I mean, they've got a version of it, a similar version, but it's not the one that's actually worn by him. I think that's still buried with him. However, it was found that it was not his nose that killed him. What had actually happened was he was at a banquet, and manners at the time dictated that you did not get up from the table.
No.
When you were in a banquet, you stayed, you enjoyed the meal, you continued the conversation, everything. However, that's all well and good, unless you really, really need the bathroom.
Right.
Tycho really, really needed the bathroom.
Okay.
And he held it, because he was being polite. And he held it, and he held it. And then his bladder burst and killed him.
Oh, shit.
He basically died of internal bleeding and ammonia poisoning.
I didn't know your bladder could actually burst.
Oh, yeah. You know when you really, really badly need it and you actually almost start to feel panicky?
Uh-huh.
It's because your bladder is constricting and it's called bladder distress.
Oh.
Because at that point, your bladder could potentially burst. And if you do, it is fatal.
Oh, jeez.
In, like, about 99% of cases, it's fatal. Because you cannot really survive without a bladder.
Wow.
Sorry.
So, yeah, he, instead of getting up and going to the bathroom, he, well, he killed himself, basically, by not going.
So we'll say, if you need the loo during a meal, just politely say, I should be back in a moment, I'm just going to pop to the lavatory.
Or I'm going to powder my nose.
Yes.
Fake nose. That's probably not the best thing for Tyler to have said. I'm just going to readjust my nose. Yeah. Just genuinely, it's good manners not to leave the table for anything else, but it's also good manners to excuse yourself rather than die at the table, because the death of a dinner guest really does put a dampener on the afternoon tea. Especially if the bladder bursts, a literal dampener.
And on that note, we will speak to you next time.
Have a supercalifragilisticexpialidocious week.